C4. Number 22A.
We take the third part, and that third part I try to epitomize as a method that the practitioner has to use. John Dolly depicted it just through the tone of life and soul, meaning what? That life, the isness of isness, the beingness of what is unchangeable, soul. Giving us, so to say, a sense, you see, that what we have seen in truth and mind as a treatment, that which we have built up in consciousness as being the truth, we know that is now to be kept absolutely intact, that we don't waver from it. Gives you now the inward attitude, the inward method of the practitioner, that he should see now that what he has established through truth and mind is something that has unchangeable identity and therefore is eternally. Life, soul. That being, the fact he has established, the isness that he established in consciousness, is immortal, is always intact, is untouched by error, that cannot get lost. Actually, that being, because it has identity, always is self-maintained, and nothing can touch that. Was I able to give the tonality of it? Huh? That once man has established in that truth and mind column, the truth we know, and therefore we know already the healthy state of being, that the practitioner now has to see that he doesn't deviate anymore from that, that he has established a truth about what? About being, life, and that being is untouchable. So, that it has identity and can never be touched. I think that's perhaps one of the best tones to say, is untouched by anything else. That it remains what it is, that it is what it is. She takes that through the seven again, in order to show how we can keep that identity of being intact in consciousness, and what has to be seen from the point of view of seven synonymous terms, that this identity just cannot be touched. So, in mind, we begin to see that the law of mind, is untouched by ignorance, is untouched by mortal thought, is untouched by human conceptions. Can you see the counterfeit of mind? That other minds, other conceptions, other messages, other opinions cannot touch the law of mind. Law, you know what law is, huh? It is untouchable. That's the nature of a law, that nothing can overthrow a law. Nothing can overthrow a law. Nothing can overthrow the law of gravitation, as far as you don't go up in outer space. But say, up to recently we would have said nothing can overthrow the law of gravitation, because we didn't know better. But in spiritual science, naturally, the very nature of law is that it is so reliable that nothing can touch it. So if something is established in mind, then it is established as a law that acts according to mind and cannot be disturbed. Can you hear the opposite of soul? Cannot be disturbed by, now the opposite of mind is ignorance and other human opinions. She gives that very nice illustration, which I think is good to refresh quickly because it gives us that real good sense why we should never waver from what we have seen in Truth and Mind. She says, if you get a cable, a telegram saying your friend has passed on, then you are very unhappy and it changes you. And if after 2 days comes another cable and says, what we sent you there was not true, your friend is okay and is happy, and then we change again back to being happy, showing that we didn't stay to the law of life. That any message which does not come from God apparently can overthrow our inner attitude. Now, in practice, this should not be so. In Christian Science practice, any telephone that tells you I'm worse and worse, any telephone, any message, any mental influence that says it is not so as what you have seen in your treatment, should not be taken into consideration. We should stay by the law, or other way around. That's what we have established in Truth and Mind, we should see as the law of mind, the law of being, and therefore should not be influenced or touched by any other opinion. Yes? At whatever the message is, whatever the surrounding mental atmosphere is that testifies to the contrary, we should stick to what we have seen spiritually and see that is our law. So actually this law would, so to say, apply to the whole second column, to the column of Truth and Mind. What we have established there, we should call it, this is the law of mind, untouched by any other opinion, ignorance. From the point of view of spirit, again we should see that unchangeable attitude which we have gained in the column of Truth and Mind, and see that what we have established in our consciousness as Truth and Mind is now, from the point of view of spirit, the only reality, the only substance, the only reality of being. That there is no other reality. That is the true order of being that is going on and therefore is never affected by. See, always when I use terms like touched by, affected by, it is a counterfeit of life and soul. It tries to overthrow the unchangeable identity. So, seeing what I have been seeing and seeing this what I have been contemplating in Truth of Mind is really substantial. This is the true substance of being. It's the substance of that patient. It's the substance of that case. And that cannot be touched by the opposite of spirit, namely, cannot be touched by matter in general. What she takes in here cannot be touched by food, for instance. When the patient doesn't eat or eat too much or has eaten this or that, it's untouched by matter. Nothing can contradict it anymore. If we take soul, she would see in that life and soul position of the unchangeability of the treatment, see that what I have been seeing, see, I always go back to the second column, what I have been seeing in Truth and Mind has supremacy over any testimony of the physical senses. It therefore remains always untouched by corporeality, by the testimony of the body, by the testimony of the sense testimony. Because the sense testimony would come in and say, but you know, you have given a very good treatment, but the body doesn't look different. The whole thing just looks the same as before. You see? And then we think, and that comes the point, are we giving in? Then we are not using the method of life and love, where we stick to what we have seen. And therefore we have to see here that we are not listening, that we are not influenced, that we are not sidetracked by the five physical senses and the testimony, that we don't listen to it, that we don't take any notice of it, but that we stick to soul, to the supremacy of what we have been seeing in our treatment, and see, that is superior. That is going to rule the case. and it's going to rule the case the way it wants to rule. So we get the rule of soul here, the supremacy of soul, the rule of soul, that is governing over the testimony of the physical senses. If you read those passages here, you find about 30 different rules that Mrs. Eddy gives. Rules like rise in the conscious strength of spirit to resist everything that is unlike God, like agree to disagree with thine enemy, rules like protest against error, contradict error, reprove error, dispute the testimony of the material sense, blot out the images of mortal thought. See, these are all rules. Individual indication of what? How we can establish life and soul, the untouchability really of being, and therefore refute opposite testimonies within ourselves, suggestions within ourselves, or the testimony of the physical senses. So if we do that, then we remain in the method of life and soul, and see that at the point of soul, we have the supremacy and the ruling of that treatment. Oh, by the way, we should have filled up in our boxes. Let's go back to mind, where we saw it is the law. It's actually the law. Always thinking, what law? That what we have been seeing in truth and mind column is now a law. The law of mind. In spirit, we have seen that it is the only substance, that there is no dualism, the only substance. The accent is on only, because it's against dualism. Just to see, this is the only reality, the only substance. In soul, we have seen the rule of soul, supremacy of soul. Yes. In principle, we would have to see that principle is governing the case, and not human theories, medical theories. If we have a case, and always human theories are involved. Medical theories are involved. Hygienic theories are involved. Common opinion, common sense is involved. And we should see that what is involved is actually that which we have established in our treatment is the principle of the case and therefore is the only government of the case. There is no other government. And that man is reflecting God's government, and there is no other theory, nothing that can govern that case differently. So we put it right under the government of principle, and therefore see it untouched by other theories. You see, man always has a sense that other theories, other predictions, other diagnoses have a power, that they also have power, that they work, and that they govern the case, that medical laws are governing the case, and that the fear comes up that we say, oh, I'm just only going to shut my eyes by seeing that only God governs the case. And there we have to be absolutely sure and absolutely untouchable that actually there is only one government, the government of principle. And that only the diagnosis of principle is right, and that no other diagnosis is right. Shall we put in governed by principle alone? In the fourth one, life. You know, so often you have a case, or practically always, because this is practically a principle for every case, that one has given a treatment and seen the truth, known the truth, and then something comes in, a suggestion comes in, which says yes, but there are very destructive influences going on, or the sense that does that have self-supporting power? Is it really so that this is isness, or are they destructive factors at work, destructive motives at work? Do you have a feeling that that case can constantly be in danger of losing its standard, its isness? And therefore one has to see, oh no, what I have seen in my treatment, Truth and Mind, has within itself the self-maintaining power of life. That what I have seen is life, is being, and being is self-maintaining, and therefore that status that I have seen in my treatment is a status that has immortality and can therefore never die, can therefore never be wiped away, can never be destroyed. And I get a terrific feeling of being self-sustaining itself. I don't have to sustain it. One always has to deal with that suggestion that something has to sustain that treatment. Either that I feel I have to think about it constantly, especially if it's a hard case, and you nearly get a bad conscience when you don't think constantly about it and feel you're not doing the work, you know? And you feel responsible for it, and you think, if I don't do the job right, that can mean death to the patient. And there comes that argument in that says you have to be constantly on the job, which is nothing else than admitting that life is not self-sustaining, that the treatment I have given must have a human sustenance, must be maintained humanly. And here we find that life is self-sustaining, that if we have seen the truth, that truth is self-sustaining. That's the point of life. All these things one has to strive through in practice, struggle through in practice, sometimes with fear and trembling, until one gets deeper and deeper and is more reliant. Can you see that this whole column of life and love is demanding of the practitioner? That's why I call his method, demands from the practitioner that method of being sure that ideas are at the state of being, that they are life, and nothing can touch them. So, in truth, we feel here that Mrs. Eddy wants to show that the form of being is the consciousness of truth, showing that we embody, and the patient embodies actually only consciousness. That his form is not the form of a man, not the form of a body. That any case, even if it's an impersonal case, a case that has not to do with the body, but with anything else, like the problem of lack or problem of relationships that has nothing to do with the body, other problems, that we see that the problem has the form of consciousness. That only consciousness is that which cannot waver, which cannot change. That divine consciousness is at the point where it is what it is, and nothing can change that. And then we put the whole problem into God's own consciousness of himself, and see that no mortal consciousness can touch that. Aren't we quite afraid sometimes, or insecure, that we feel, here I have a case, and I've given a good treatment, I've seen the truth about it, and then something comes up and says, but is that case not influenced by the surrounding, influenced by other minds, by minds that don't agree? The family doesn't like Christian Science, they don't like Christian Science, the patient is surrounded by mortal mind, by mortal consciousness. And isn't so that one feels that that mortal consciousness can change the situation, can change my treatment, can make my treatment ineffective, can influence that case to the contrary? Can you see, one doesn't quite, at that point, wouldn't see clearly that all there is about the case is that it exists in divine consciousness as the form of truth. And then if it is divine consciousness, that divine consciousness is all-embracing and therefore has within itself no inimical consciousness, no opposing consciousness, and we feel it doesn't really matter what kind of mortal mind is around the patient. It really doesn't matter, because if the case is embedded in divine consciousness, then it's surrounded by divine consciousness, it's influenced by the divine consciousness, it's supported by divine consciousness, it's maintained by the divine consciousness, it's protected by the divine consciousness. Nothing can touch it. Nothing can touch it. Life and soul. Yes. Then, what shall we put in here? Here we can put in that his method is really the consciousness of truth. Yes. In love, the last subject, we see here that the fulfillment of being is the perfection of love. That we should go out from the fulfillment again as a perfect state and see that nothing can prevent perfection. That no imperfection can change perfection. Really, that we see that perfection changes imperfection. Usually we believe that imperfection can change perfection, that it has an influence on perfection. Whereas if we have the identity of being, the unchangeableness of being, then perfection remains perfection and no imperfection can touch it. What kind of imperfection? The imperfection of thought cannot touch it. Imperfect thoughts cannot touch it. Imperfect laws cannot touch it. Imperfect food, matter, cannot touch it. See, sometimes one has to see that if one eats food that is rotten and that tries to be poisonous and says, well, imperfection can destroy perfection. That's all there is, huh, about that claim. And so one has to see that nothing can touch perfection. That an imperfect testimony of the physical senses cannot touch it either, cannot alter it. Yes, so we can write down in that box there, perhaps the perfection of love. That we stick through to perfection of love. Stick to. Do you hear what synonymous terms are involved in it? To be a sticker, huh? Life and soul, huh? We stick to what? We stick to being, to that which is. And if we stick to perfection, and we stick to perfection, and no imperfection can touch it anymore. Yes. Oh, life. Didn't we do life? No. We forget life. All right, let's go back to life and perhaps see there the self-maintaining life. Self-maintaining life. Yes. Shall we just run through those seven again, if possible, with a sense of spiritual tonality, with a practical sense of what is involved in it. Involved in it is fundamental in that column of life and soul, what? That the practitioner is giving a treatment of truth and mind. And now the point is that something usually tries to interfere and testify against it. And his method, the method of the practitioner, is to stick to his treatment, not to let himself be influenced by it so that he begins to waver in that what he has seen. He has to be untouched, uninfluenced, And so stay with what he has seen. Stay with what he has seen, stay with what is, life and soul. How can we stay with what we have seen? By seeing in mind that what we have seen is a law that does not change. It's not changeable. We cannot be influenced by ignorance. And so we ask always mind and never mortal mind if that treatment is good or not, if it was right or not, if it was testifying to the truth or not. We ask always the law of mind, and there we get the answer. In spirit we see that what we have seen in our treatment is the only substance there is, that there is no substance, no reality in any other treatment, that nothing can interfere with it, with that, that nothing can touch it. In soul, we see that that which we have seen in our treatment is always superior to every other thing, to all the other influences, to the other testimonies, that it is completely, that it controls the situation completely, and therefore that we don't have to listen to the testimony of the physical senses. In principle, we see that our treatment is governing the case. There is no other government, no other theories that are established about the case, because the medical people will establish about the same case another picture, another treatment, another prophecy. And so, in principle, we have to see that only that is governing which I have established in my treatment. In life, I begin to see that what I have established in my treatment is self-supporting. It lives by itself. It has within itself the life power. I don't have to give to that treatment power, nor to sustain it, nor is there anything that can destroy that treatment. That treatment is indestructible. And in truth, I know that that treatment which I have given is actually a treatment in consciousness, and never in anything else. It is therefore a form of consciousness. See, because I have given in the divine consciousness, that very case is a form of consciousness. And in the form of the divine consciousness, no human consciousness, no mortal consciousness, no erroneous consciousness can touch it. And if I see it from the point of view of love, I see my treatment has considered the perfection of love, the perfection of being, and that perfection of being cannot be touched by imperfection. Nothing can touch it anymore. And you can see how one has to stick to that. Huh? A terrific sense of a balanced consciousness is necessary so that one does not waver. Huh? One does not get any sense of insecurity. It's an inward stability of vision that is necessary. Yes.